And now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gamblin with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
Yes, indeed, the tradition does continue here at 77 WABC. Friday, get together here on the John Gamblin Show, and Mr. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is indeed with us. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning, John. It's chilly out there this morning.
Just a little bit. You're always taking credit for the good weather. When are you going to warm it up?
Well, this is good weather. It's good for polar bears. It's good for the people that sell coats and gloves and scarves and hats. The people that like it.
First of all, happy birthday to you. 65th this week in
Thank you very much. Senior
citizen discount. That's a two-edged sword.
I have my, it's two-edged. I'd rather be 65 than
that's
not.
And
my green Metro card is something that's unique. Got my picture on it. And
I was not aware of that. As a senior citizen, when you're Metro card,
you're not
you get
old
a picture
enough.
In the whole
absolutely.
Of course. Absolutely. I know that. I'll get there soon enough.
Well, I hope so. You know, it's a lot better than the alternatives.
It is indeed. Let us talk about the controversy, at least on the part of some, about the tickets for not digging out the cars, alternate side of the street parking on Wednesday. Interestingly enough, Mr. Mayor, Debbie Duhame, our traffic reporter, just said alternate side was canceled for today.
Look, we have to make a decision, and we do it differently each time. If there's a lot of snow, there's no question that you certainly don't continue with the alternate side of the street parking. You suspend it. If there's no snow, obviously you have it because we have to clean the streets. This one, we made a decision, thought that there was not that much snow and that we could do a better job if people did move their cars. I think in retrospect, in some parts of the city, there was not that much snow, and in other parts, it probably really was an imposition. We did get a lot of calls, and I listened very carefully to what the sanitation department heard, what our community assistance unit heard, took a look at what calls came into 311, and I think what I decided to do was this morning I instructed the Department of Finance to waive any alternate side of the street parking tickets for yesterday and today. Now, there are police officers and traffic agents out there giving out tickets today. We've tried to tell them don't do it anymore. Can't get to all of them. But there's about 4,000 tickets that were given out yesterday, and there'll probably be some number like that today. And the computer is just going to waive them. So if you got a parking ticket for yesterday or today, it's waived. You don't have to respond even. If you got a parking ticket from 2 days ago or, sometime in the future, you got to pay that. And, I'm sorry for the inconvenience for people. But you got to make decisions and try things, and each storm is different. It's funny, if you have the kind of snow and ice that we had, it's harder to clean the streets than if you had 6 or 8 inches of snow, because 6 or 8 inches of snow, the plows go down the street, push it to the side. With the ice, it's harder to do, and, sanitation workers are out there with dangerous conditions and cold, and they do a great job, and I think this time they did do a good job. Some parts of the country have big snowstorms. We've been very lucky. Talked to my mother yesterday. They didn't have any snow in Boston. But you take a look a couple of feet in Albany, and if you go up far enough north, they had 100-plus inches of snow.
Yeah, just absolutely insane. Now, as I understand it, it is the law that if you are a homeowner and a business owner, you have to keep your sidewalk clean, right?
That is true, and you still have to do that. I did get a call from somebody, I won't embarrass the store, but a very major store in New York City. This person claimed the sidewalks in front of that store were not shoveled, so I had somebody call the store. I don't know if it's true or not, but I guarantee if that wasn't, if the sidewalks hadn't been cleared, they are probably by now. Snow and ice and sleet are just facts of life in the Northeast where we live. We're just lucky that it wasn't a lot worse. And the good news is we did not have one major accident during all of this. And in the end, that's as good a measure as anything. So, once again, sorry for the inconvenience people that moved their cars. You did help the plows. They didn't get every place. It didn't help in every case, but on balance it did. And the next time we'll take a look at it. If it's, a trace, then you probably continue to keep alternate side of the park of parking in. If it's a lot of snow, obviously you don't. But let me also remind everybody, if you see a pothole because all of these plows do tear the streets, call 311 and we'll get to it as quickly as we can.
I think maybe the people over at JetBlue might have used the sanitation department. They certainly had their problems this week.
You know, that happens. I don't quite understand how it happens or why, but it happens enough times that you probably it's not such an easy call for the airlines. That once they pull away from the gate, they can't get back, and everybody wants to stay on the plane and go because they want to get to their vacation or visit their family or get to their business trip, and nobody really wants to cancel. And then only in retrospect, they say, oh, well, if we'd known we weren't going to go for 10 hours, we wouldn't have gotten on the plane. Yeah, fine.
It is a problem. It's just surprising that JetBlue, which is such a good company, kind of melted down the other day. We'll get into that a little bit later on with Chris Wallace.
Yeah, you know, incidentally, before I forget, I talked about the great job the sanitation department did yesterday. If you want to work for the sanitation department and be one of our strongest, we are taking applications for the civil service exam. Filing period is open through March 27th. This is a very popular exam. It leads to a great job with great benefits, and you really make a difference in the quality of life of people that live in this city. So the exam, which has a written test, is scheduled for June 9th, and the physical test, which takes place when the sanitation department needs new recruits, costs $30, the filing fee, and you can get an application at any one of the sanitation department's 59 neighborhood garages or by calling
311.
You got it. For more information, report your potholes and join the sanitation department. We will make sure that if people call 311 and say, you really mean I don't have to pay my parking tickets for yesterday or today, 311 operators will be sure to say that is correct.
Are applications for most municipal jobs, I mean, we've talked about the police and fire department, now sanitation, are they generally strong?
Yes, absolutely, because, you know, the city has 300,000 employees who do a great job, and the benefits are better than you can get in the private sector generally. Salaries are sometimes as good, in some other cases not quite as good. You know, we have a retirement policy and benefits and health care and a compassion for each other that makes working for this city a real joy. And, you know, we probably out of our 300,000 employees have a few who are going to call up and say, I don't like it. But let me tell you, I've enjoyed it and hope to work for another 3 years for the city. And if you look at the number of applicants, the sanitation department has plenty and the fire department has plenty. The police department's a little bit lower, although I'm told that's true across the country. I'm not quite sure why. Maybe a function of a strong economy.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang on just a second here. Let me take care of a little business. We'll get back to you in just a moment at 77 WABC. 77 WABC. We roll on with Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on Friday at 77 WABC. John Gambling with you. Mr. Mayor, the Catholic Church not very happy with the city and their subway condoms.
Look, I respect the cardinal and the bishop, and they have strong views, which I respect, and I happen to disagree with the views. But this is not an issue of faith. This is a health issue for the city. Sadly, New York City has a very high rate of HIV and AIDS, an unconscionably high rate given the educational level of people in this city, and they should know how AIDS and HIV is transmitted. What we're trying to do is, I think Tom Frieden said it best yesterday, abstinence really is the best way, but the real world is that an awful lot of people don't practice abstinence, and in those cases, if we can do something to stop the spread of HIV/AIDS, we will save a lot of lives. It isn't so much that we're giving out the condoms enough to satisfy all the demand, it's that the publicity from it will perhaps convince people that they should not practice unprotected sex. I think that they'd be better off, particularly young people in waiting until they're adults, and that's up to them. But and I think that is, incidentally, an appropriate thing for the church. They should preach to their congregants, what they think is the appropriate ways to live your lives. But the health department has to work with the real world of people not practicing protected sex, not practicing abstinence, and this is a ways to keep people alive.
Do you think some people might have had sort of an edge about this because the Subway logos were on there, that if they hadn't have been there, it might have been less impactful?
Well, the Subway logos are there to make it impactful. We're not trying to put the drugstores that sell prophylactics out of business or sell condoms. We're not trying to undercut their business. We're trying to convince people to use to take protection so that they don't spread AIDS. And one of the HIV/AIDS, and one of the real problems is there are an awful lot of people in this city that are HIV positive and don't know it. And if they practice sex with others, unprotected sex, they could easily be spreading HIV/AIDS and killing people. So, you know, knowing your HIV status is something that we've worked on very hard. And encouraging people to, if they are going to have sex with others, do it with use a condom.
There's a talk around about creating legislation that would require all of us in the state of New York. I think this was a state bill up in Albany, that whenever a blood test is taken, they check for HIV. This is not passed, but your thoughts on that? Good idea.
There is a law that requires a doctor, before they give a test for HIV/AIDS, to get written consent and to explain things to you. We don't do it with other communicable diseases. I don't think we should have a test where we grab you on the street and say you must take a test for anything. On the other hand, when you are taking tests for things, it's well-known common practice in prevention to test you for communicable diseases. We do it when you get married. We do it in physicals, when you have a physical, which you should get one every year, particularly as you get older. And in those, I don't think that the test for HIV/AIDS should be any different than the test for any other communicable diseases. It isn't that it should be special and forced on people, but we shouldn't make the test for HIV/AIDS any more difficult. You know, I think we did, we've canceled the requirement for a blood test when you get married. But even so, we're all better off if we know our status and then can act appropriately.
All right, I want to get into some of the things you said earlier in the week down in Washington. I want to do that in the next half hour if we could. The judge ruled, I think it was yesterday, that videotaping of protesters by police is unconstitutional. Your thoughts?
Look, we're trying to prevent and protect, and working with the courts, I think we believe... and I'll see whether we appeal, but we believe that what we were doing was within the agreement, within the law, and ruling yesterday. We just got to study it and see. Nobody should take away people's personal rights. You have a right to privacy, and you have a right to be innocent until convicted. But on the other hand, the police are in the difficult position of they want to stop situations from getting out of hand, and the ways you do that is to intervene early, and you just have to do it within the law. We are a country of laws, and we will do whatever, in the end, the courts tell us that we can and cannot do.
Those videotapes were used in the past, and I suspect in the future as well, to identify people that broke the law, were they not?
John, anytime you go out in this day and age, in every city in the country, probably in the world from now on, there's a whole bunch of cameras on you. Every store has cameras. Lots of street corners have cameras. The days of not having people photograph you, I think, are long gone. Now, whether that's good or bad for society, that we can have a nice discussion about it. But the real world is that there are lots of cameras photographing you all the time. And whether the police can explicitly have a camera and use it when there is a protest and look at the film and see if there are among the protesters people that fit a certain pattern or that have been in known to the police and whatever for whatever reason. That's what the courts are there to protect the public from to try to find that right balance between what the police need to do to keep us safe and your personal rights. And there, in many cases, are no right answers. It's easy to say, no intrusion whatsoever, but then we wouldn't have a society because you wouldn't be able to go out in the streets. The other side is the other extreme is not perfect either. None of us want to live in a society where we're perfectly safe but don't have any rights. So.
Interesting. Speaking of cameras, in USA Today, there's a story about the red light cameras at the intersections. A Philadelphia group did a study. First, they found that violations dropped by 36% after yellow lights were extended to give drivers more warning that the light was about to turn red. But after this is the interesting part, after the red light cameras were added, remaining violations dropped 96%. Has Albany, has the governor given an indication that he's going to let you do more?
I have not personally talked to the governor about it. I've always argued that, number one, this should be up to the city. It shouldn't be up to Albany. The reason Albany is involved in this is the city does not have the right to give out a ticket, a fine, which is what keeps people from breaking the law, without Albany's approval. I think that this should be up to the city, not up to Albany. But in any case, even if it is up to Albany, there's no question. I'm sure that number is approximately right. When there are red light cameras and people know they're going to get tickets from jumping the light, they tend not to break the law and go through the light. And what that does is it brings down fatalities dramatically. And remember, it's seniors that typically get hit at a corner when somebody runs to the light. And the reason is, I think as you get older, you walk slower, you don't hear quite as well, see
quite as
well.
I know that's true of me.
It's certainly true of me as well. I mean, the numbers are clear. And so my attitude is when Albany says no to more red light cameras, and I think they recently gave us, we went from 50 to 100, which they thought they were doing a big deal for us. We have 5,000 miles of roads in the city.
Yeah, exactly.
And an awful lot of street corners. And, it would really make a difference if we could put up red light cameras. People say, you're getting so much money. Well, number one, we use the money to reduce your taxes or to provide services that people want. But more importantly, it really does save lives.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we're run a little long here on our half-hour mark. I'll be right back to you at 77 WABC. But on that half hour, Bobita.
77 WABC.
John Gambling here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. It wasn't Mr. Smith who went to Washington. It was Mr. Bloomberg this week. A couple of things. First, you met with Condoleezza Rice. And is there some talk that the UN could move somewhere other than New York?
There are people who don't like the UN and don't want it here. I think that'd be terrible for the city because it's a big economic engine. There are people who don't like the United Nations, don't think it should exist. I don't happen to agree with them. I think even if the things are said that you don't like, and even if it's ineffectual, it's better to talk than not. You never know. It might actually keep us from having a war sometime. But if the UN were to move, I think the politics are it move out of the country, and we don't want that. We want to, when they say we'll move it down to Governor's Island, it'd be a great place to build a new United Nations, but they're not going to move. They'll stay right where they are. What we want to do is make sure that they grow here because they could start putting more offices elsewhere, and there are lots of cities and countries around the world that would love to have them. It means a lot of jobs. Means a lot for the stores. Remember, the people that benefit from diplomacy in the city, John, are the people who work in stores, work in restaurants. Diplomats come here and they spend a lot of money, and they're the ones that use the services. So we love them. Incidentally, we also have cut out all of the traffic violations, or virtually all. You don't see a diplomatic car generally parked in, I'm sure there's some, but you don't see them in front of fire hydrants or no parking zones anymore. There's about $18 million, as I remember, of old fines, which we'll probably, I'm sure, never collect. But there's no new fines being waged that we don't collect anymore because we have a good policy and we tow people.
Last Friday, we touched on, we mentioned that you were headed down on Monday to address Congress on health care in the United States. And I must admit, I couldn't agree with you more in the one of the basic premises that our system is reactive to disease and health issues rather than proactive and preventative. Our financial system, the actuarials, go with the cheaper way to do it, which is a major operation after you're violently sick.
Well, the problem is that if you get sick, you scream very loudly for assistance, help. Your family's there, or the elected officials are there. But if you're okay, there's no great constituency to give you the kinds of advice and preparation and try to convince you to make those small sacrifices that will keep you healthy.
An example of this are colonoscopies. Colonoscopies, which doctors in the medical profession will tell you can save thousands of lives, are not generally paid for by insurance.
I don't know whether that's true. My company's insurance plan does pay for it.
I got to go work for your company now.
Yeah, you probably should. We'd love to have you, John. We have a couple thousand journalists. We'd be happy to take you as well.
Fair enough. But I have to tell you that there are many, including mine, that do not. Well, and it costs like $2,500.
That's one thing. Let's assume that's only one thing. For example, I'll give you some things that you can do that don't cost a lot. Don't smoke. Don't overeat or overdrink. Don't do drugs. Look both ways before you cross the street. There are a lot of things you can do that don't cost anything that will dramatically increase your chances of living not only many more years, but in better health.
But the cost, the cost of medicine today, whether it's health insurance premiums or in the hospital yourself, is in many instances turned upside down. Is in your view, is there a way to turn it right side up?
Yes, the answer is yes. Without pain and without sacrifice and without having elected officials stand up and annoy some groups, probably not. We do have more beds than we need in hospitals, but you see the firestorm when they try to close hospitals. As a matter of fact, Governor Pataki started, and Governor Spitzer said that he would continue with it, an independent group which will recommend which hospitals to close, and the legislature has to vote them up or down as a group. They do the same thing at a federal level with military base closings because nobody's got the wants to stand up and say to a community, we're closing your hospital. But we all agree there are too many. It's just the other guy. There are decisions we have to make as to what things are covered and how much care. There are people who believe that if the problem with health care is that you get it if you are covered, and there's no reason why you wouldn't keep getting as much as you can, and so that's the concept behind copays. But the numbers that are really important here, I tried to use in my speech number 16. 16% of our gross domestic product is spent on health care, and that's not something that any society long-term could tolerate. We can have arguments about how to fix it, but I don't think anybody disagrees that it's too much money. When the taxpayer looks at their taxes, they're just yelling and screaming. And the 16% of the public does not have any insurance, and that's also intolerable. The strange thing, or disappointing or worrisome thing, is that if you look at people who have real heart disease and real diseases that may not have been preventable, 90% of them have coverage. Now, the numbers are probably skewed because people that don't have coverage may not get the care they needed. But the point of it is that just because you have coverage doesn't mean that you won't be sick. And curing these diseases is expensive and sometimes doesn't work. So taking care of yourself as a preventive measure is the first thing that we should focus on. And unfortunately, it's not very sexy. It doesn't get the elected official a photo op. You can't deliver it. Nobody says thank you. It's painful sometimes. You know, trying to stop smoking is not easy. People do come up to me all the time and say, thank you for I hated your smoking ban, but it got me to stop smoking, and I'm going to live longer, and my family's going to live longer because they won't inhale the secondhand smoke. But it's not easy.
All right. There's been a lot of discussion over the last year or so, actually longer, but it's been more focused over the last year, on first responders, health issues, World Trade Center. A major emotional story was that of Cesar Borgia, who his family said was there at the very beginning and died from a horrible lung ailment from that. The New York Times pointed out that the story was not completely right. Is that important?
Well, I think we've got to make sure that we spend our money helping people who are really who really need it, and where if it's the idea is to help people who caught or affected by working or being downtown right after this tragedy, want to make sure that the monies go to those people. And that's why you have boards. And I've said over the last 5 years, until we really do a study, and only with time will you know, we really don't know why any one person is sick. It's only you look statistically, you look over a long period of time. And I asked Ed Schuyler, deputy mayor, and Linda Gibbs, another deputy mayor, to put together a group and to look at what, after 5 years, we've learned, and are we doing the right thing? And I think what we've concluded is there's clearly gaps in the coverage. Our fire department and police department, municipal workers have been getting good care, monitoring, and care if there is something wrong. The public has an alternative of going into Bellevue Hospital. We have a program, but they have not been taking advantage of it. So one thing is to tell more people about it and tell them to get a checkup. It makes some sense. Then the issue is we know a certain percentage of people are going to come down with lung diseases and other diseases that probably statistically look like they were caused by being downtown, and we want to make sure that we have enough care for them. That's going to cost society roughly, I think our estimate was $350 million a year for the foreseeable future. Cost the city $150 million out of that. And we think that the federal government should pay for that because the attack was an attack against America, not necessarily.
What kind of reaction did you get in Washington to that plea?
Well, just starting to talk about it. And that actually, our report came out the day afterwards. You know, I think it's going to be a heavy lift. But the good news is that both of our senators are in the party that controls the Senate, and the majority of our congressional delegation is in the party that controls the House. And they're going to have to carry the water there. I can go down and testify, and I certainly will do that. But they're the ones that are going to have to work with the leadership in both the Senate and the House and make sure that they bring home the bacon.
Speaking of the bacon, your reaction to the Speaker of the City Council's suggestion that renters get a $300 property tax rebate.
How did we get to bacon on that?
I don't know. Well, you said you were bringing home the bacon.
Well, and then, okay, that's at home. Okay, I got it. We'll have to take a look at, Christine Quinn is somebody who really does care about the city, and I think's been doing a very good job. She's had a number of different proposals in her State of the City, and we'll evaluate each of those. Some of them are trade-offs. Where we can't do everything, and we'll have to see during the budget negotiations. Some of them may be great ideas. Some, if we actually work together and look at it, they won't be. But nobody comes up with all good ideas. But she really is trying to make a difference in this city, and it'll be part of the budget process,
right,
which has to end by the end of June.
All right, let's make some room on the other side of this particular break. The last one for telephone calls, 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-WABC. Mr. Mayor coming right. We are back for our final few here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC and with you as well at 1-800-848-WABC. Mr. Mayor, let's go to Stuart in Midtown Manhattan. Stuart, good morning. You've got the mayor's ear. Go ahead.
Hi, Mr. Mayor.
Hi.
I'm calling about the proposed ban on iPods while crossing the street. I'm
yes.
wondering if we're going to enforce this proposed law the same way we enforce jaywalking, spitting, walking between subway cars,
Stuart,
and all the other news.
I don't think you have to worry about it. I don't think there's a chance in heck that that law will be passed. Now, should people listen? Yes, I have a very close friend, a woman who works for Bloomberg, who was hit by a bus while jogging with her iPod. Whether the iPod had anything to do with it or not, I have no idea. She doesn't even remember. She's fortunately, at the beginning, they thought she might die. She's home from the hospital and recovering and should recover fully. But, you know, listening to an iPod while you're driving, for example, is a pleasurable, but you can't hear somebody honking. Or when you're walking in the street, you can't hear somebody yelling, maybe. Trying to do two things at once is something we all do, but we're not going to have a law against it.
All right, Stuart, thanks a lot. Let's go to Bill here in Manhattan. Bill, your question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Oh, hello, Mr. Mayor. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
I wanted to offer both praise and constructive criticism. First, a praise. I think you're the best political manager, executive, and communicator since Ronald Reagan. I love listening to the Friday morning shows. I learned so much.
You know, I never met Ronald Reagan, but I've gotten to know his wife, who is a very big supporter of stem cell research. She believes that if we had started on stem cell research more completely in this country and earlier, that maybe her husband could have been helped. People say he was a nice guy. I mean, I watched him on television. I read about him. I never met a president until more modern day.
Well, I think you have the common touch the way he does, and you are able to explain things and do things in government, and people have faith then. And I think, you know, you've turned New York into more of a small town. Yesterday I had an issue. I called 311. Great system. I had a call back from the mayor's office within a half hour. I was angry. Great person on the line, Ray, was able to explain things. He listened. He didn't offer another reality to my reality. And, you know, and I guess my issue would be, besides not declaring a snow emergency, because there's a lot of older people in the city, and I was having difficulty as a young man getting around with a bag. The production companies have gotten too much power. They seem to be dictating to the police what can be done. We couldn't.
Bill, you're talking about the movies, Bill. We got a time issue. You're talking about the movies,
movie.
Okay?
Unfortunately, yesterday was a difficult issue getting around. A lot of older people, and the movies kept filming.
Yeah.
Bill, there's some people love movies being filmed on their block. They find it exciting to watch the stars and watch all the equipment. Other people find it intrusive and frustrating. The truth of the matter is, it generates an enormous number of jobs. My recollection is something over 100,000 jobs in film, theater, and television, and billions of dollars of economic activity. And that goes to keep this city going. What we try to do is to keep them from filming in the same locations all the time, although if you want to film Bethesda Fountain, there's only one Bethesda Fountain. But we do try to the department's run by Kathy Oliver, a woman who's done a heck of a job, and it's finding some balance. You're right. I'm sure that sometimes it's too much at the same place and sometimes it isn't.
We have, unfortunately, not enough time for a full phone call.
But John, I do have something to say.
What's that?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, the Chinese New Year.
Well, it's not just Chinese. It's the Lunar New Year. It starts on Sunday, the February 18th, and the year will be?
I have not a clue.
4705. Don't forget it. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Mr. Mayor. And again, a happy birthday to you, and we'll catch up next Friday.
Looking forward to it.
All right, Mayor Michael Bloomberg here.